This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Numbers too big to ignore. Why don't you talk to me? Good evening. You're listening to Hear Me Roar. I'm Sue, and co-hosting with me tonight is Kathy and Lisa. Welcome, ladies.
Good evening and welcome. Thank you, Sue.
And good evening.
It's a bit of a busy night here at Joy, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a big party going on outside. I went with someone to bring me a complimentary Chardonnay, but nobody's kind of coughed it up yet. Maybe if I scream a little louder, they might be able to hear me over the rabble.
I'm hoping they will, because it's hard work in here. We need a bit of a drink. Later on this hour, we'll be talking to the recently thrown Miss Gay Melbourne, and we'll be finding out what it means to be Miss Gay Melbourne. Now, recently, this is pretty exciting. We've gone to podcast.
Yippee! We've gone global, Sue.
We have. Now, we've got a lot of overseas listeners, which is really exciting. And how do we get to the podcast?
I don't know. You tell me. I haven't gone there.
Do you know, Lisa?
You're at the vanguard of the information era here. Give us a look.
Well, I think you'd probably just go to the Joy website, and there's a link to Hear Me Roar, and I believe you just follow the podcast link.
Nice.
How simple is that?
That's very easy.
And to top it off, we also have a blog. Check the blog. We have a question on it and a poll, so you can take a poll on the blog. It sounds quite nasty, doesn't it? You can have a poll. But the question is, could you, or do you think you could win Miss Gay Melbourne?
Oh, awesome. Well, maybe we can get some updates from someone throughout the show to see what the response would be.
Yep, 7 days to take that poll. Kathy.
Well, all right, current affairs this week. Well, last week we talked about gay marriage, and it still hasn't gone away, which is a good thing. Sort of, okay. It's very much in the public eye. The Labor Party meeting is happening in Sydney as we speak to determine the party's policies for the next 12 months. The big news this week is that the Tasmanian chapter of the Labor Party has endorsed same-sex marriage.
Yay.
That happened last weekend at its state conference. As we all probably are aware, the Equal Love National Day of Action is on this Saturday in Sydney and in Melbourne, and the organisers are expecting a big community turnout to pressure the current government to embrace same-sex marriage, or even just put it on the agenda. The bad news is that Kay Rudd has told the ABC he welcomes the debate but does not support gay marriage.
Why is that? Do you think that's because of his Catholic grounding? Because 60%, we've had the recent poll, 60% of Australians say that yes, they support it, and allegedly Mr. Rudd, the dud, he's supposed to what's the word? Help me out here.
He's supposed to follow his constituents and
thank
see
you
what
very much.
Follow public opinion. As we all know, it's a very emotive issue. I don't know. We'll probably explore this a little bit later when we're talking to Tracy about it too, and get other people's opinions. But there is a significant push for it. There's a lot of support for it. It'll be interesting to see how the government reacts to the rallies, because there were going to be big marches in Sydney this weekend, and now that one of the states has even decided to support it. Interesting that it is Tasmania.
I think so, yeah.
You would think that Tasmania, being the Apple Isle, is kind of away from everything else. It wouldn't be as progressive as it is. But I think that's got to do with a campaigner down there by the name of Rodney Croom, who's with the Australian Coalition for Equality. He's one of those Barrow pushes that really gets under people's skin and, you know, forces them to look at the issues. So I don't know whether the Labor Party will go for it, to be perfectly honest.
I don't think they're ready to go for it yet. Lisa, do you think they're ready?
No, I think personally that they will take a little bit of time to get around to doing something about it, perhaps in the next election.
I'll see what it takes. I don't know what it's going to take.
Well, the other good news is that there is a same-sex marriage inquiry, which is the Senate is undertaking at the moment, and there was a deadline for people to submit their stories. Whether you agree with same-sex marriage or whether you don't, it doesn't really matter. They just want to hear your opinions on it. Obviously, for the lobbyists and people who do want to introduce gay marriage, that it would be good for those stories to be positive. But they just do want to hear. But that the deadline has been extended to August 28th, so you can go to the Equal Love website and go and submit.
It's very easy. The only issue I see here is that the Labor Party has moved ahead this conference. They're having it this week. It started today.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the results from the submissions and so forth, and there's another submission into gay rights, isn't actually going to be available till the end of the year. So they're meeting to make decisions on information they haven't yet got, which I think is a bit naughty.
Well, that probably just, you know, we answer our own question, don't we? I think that at this stage, there's just got to be continued pressure. And I think that's what the National Day of Action is all about. I think that's what all these petitions are about. And the fact that the Senate is looking into it is a good thing. And we know the Senate isn't held by the Labor government. There are minority parties that go in there. Unfortunately, sometimes that comes down to Senator Steve Fielding, who is in Family First. So,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay. If it's up to him, then we're pretty much shot.
Well, as we say, let's wait to the next election. You might have this, something like this could be a come of conscience vote, though, and some liberal-minded liberals may jump the fence.
We could also put in Tracy for PM. First Miss Gay Melbourne in the world.
Yeah, that's it. She could be the poster girl. We'll ask her about that later. Well, so she's
we'll
happy
see what, yeah, we'll see what she says.
All right. The other news this week is that Midsummer, our annual gay and lesbian festival, has finally hit the black. Last year they posted a loss of 47,354. This year it's a surplus, 34,177. So that's very good news. It is an expensive festival, costs about $500,000 to run it. 150 of that is for carnival, a lot of that is insurance as well as stalls and also rent. But there's 200,000 that comes from the City of Melbourne. So it's good news. I think the last few years they have decided to cut the opening ceremony in Federation Square. That was probably in excess of $100,000, $150,000 just for one night.
Is that how much it cost to hire the square?
Yeah, the cost of the square, because you have to then hire their cleaners, their security, their everything else. So and for one night, and hiring all the venues around it for all the you know, associated events that go on with that opening night was a big drain. So the forecast is good.
So the opening event used to be what it was in Brunswick Street. Is that what it was? And we used to have an opening party, and it used to be either in Brunswick Street and then it moved to Commercial Road. Is that the opening event?
You would know more than me. I'm not a native of Melbourne.
Fed Square is the legend, and it's an ideal place to do something like that, isn't it? Because you get not only the people from the community, you get a lot of people who would be walking by thinking, hey, what's that? Let's go and take a look.
Well, that was the idea of having something in, you know, a public display. The drawback to that is that Fed Square is an open space. You can't close it off like you can with Carnival, and you can't make money by donations, which is our carnival. It's a donation, gold coin donation. I'm saying that with doing my little
nobody can see it. It's not a webcam.
Yeah, okay, sorry. Apostrophe marks. So it isn't compulsory, but they do recoup some money by people putting, you know, coins in the bucket as they come in. So, but the good news is that if it's operating in the black now, we can, you know, at least still have a festival and not go down the path of Mardi Gras and be, you know, and be off because we can't afford to have it.
No, it's fantastic, and well done to the committee who brought that forward.
All right, moving overseas, there's a teacher in a private London school has been accused of having a lesbian affair with a 15-year-old pupil. Police have said 26-year-old music teacher Helen Goddard was arrested for sexual assault. The charge was later changed to sexual activity with a child. Parents were advised by text message, very technologically advanced, and head teacher Diana Vernon wrote on the website for the school that staff had reported the matter to police and described it as an alleged inappropriate relationship with one of our students. But Goddard's phone has been confiscated as evidence. Obviously, there were some text messages or some images being sent, and she's been out on bail now. So a few of us have worked with the Department of Education, and it's got a little bit of a tinge of notes of a scandal kind of running over here. What do we make of this?
Well, we don't have the psycho teacher. Look, I am a teacher, and I was thinking about this today, and there is that component where you are a teacher and you're seeing beautiful people, whether it's physically beautiful or intellectually beautiful, but there is a moral cutoff.
Mm-hmm.
There's your social conscience that says that is just not appropriate. You don't look at that person and sexualise them as a 15-year-old. I don't think it's an issue of power. You know, I'm the teacher and I have this sort of kind of power over you, and that's really, excuse me, sexually gratifying. But I do think we do look at beautiful people, and we are attracted generally to beautiful people.
True, but it's kind of an abuse of trust, really, isn't it? I mean, that's the whole premise of when you're talking about these kinds of relationships with people, you know, with your teacher. I'm thinking, I've got ABBA in my head now, you know, when I kiss the teacher. But it's kind of, for school kids, it could be a kind of a fantasy, I guess, you know, with their teachers. But for teachers to go the opposite way, and for someone who's 15, and I don't believe the laws in the UK allow 15-year-olds to legally have any sort of sexual activity.
It's a breach of trust and completely inappropriate. There's no way it should happen. The systems, the policies, everything is in place that this doesn't happen. I think the teacher's just really stepped over the line. Lisa?
Yeah, no, I think she's 26, but that certainly doesn't give her any right to, you know, sort of molest, I suppose. That's probably a bit of a hard word, but it is kind of.
No, not really. No. It's illegal.
It was downgraded from sexual assault to sexual activity.
Well, maybe that implies consent.
It might. It might also mean that it wasn't a physical thing. It might have been sexual images on the phone.
Mm.
So it might have been a more of an intellectual, sort of spiritual,
totally
naughty.
Inappropriate.
Completely. Yeah. I just think it's disgusting. As a teacher, I find it completely disgusting.
I remember having a crush on a teacher when I was a teenager, but there was never any thought of trying to seduce the teacher either, I guess. So,
well, it's like that woman whose name escapes me will probably come to me at the end of the show and I'll blurt it out in a weird way. But the woman who had an affair with a male student had two kids to him, left her husband, and then she got out of jail. Like, he was 20 years her junior or something, got out of jail, and they ended up, you know, living with their two, possibly three children. But she went to jail for that offence, for having this, you know, relationship, even though they were in love and he was obviously consenting.
I know, but it's still weird, isn't it?
Well, the bottom line is that it's illegal, so
it's illegal.
So it shouldn't go there.
It's no.
It's a no.
All right, last story I've got for you is more of a happy one, kind of. It's a bit of a mixed bag, actually. Australian gay athletes have done us proud at the World Out Games, which is in Copenhagen at the moment. Melburnians Peter Sagar and Corey Cannell were part of the 1,000-metre quadruple sculls team, and they won a bronze on the first day.
Fantastic.
Nice work, boys. However, the games have had a scary hiccup, with four explosive devices being thrown onto the athletics track during a relay, and two men were arrested for the bashing of three athletes who had to be hospitalised. As I said, sounds like a mixed bag for our team and those attending the Human Rights Conference, which is also going on in Copenhagen as part of the Out Games.
It's really sad to think that people are so disgusted by the GLBTI community that they want to physically harm people participating in the games. Now, what was being said, Lisa, about the bombs? They weren't really bombs.
Well, yeah. Apparently they said that they were large firecrackers or something ridiculous like that.
That's what the Danish media are saying, yeah.
It's just a method of downgrading the actual event. And apparently I heard, I don't know, it was a rumour, that they actually got thrown from a church as well. So that's kind of a contradiction as well.
The gay athletes got thrown?
No, the bombs got thrown from
the firecrackers.
Yeah, the firecrackers got thrown from a church. So,
good Lord.
Crazy.
Literally.
Good Lord.
Isn't that ridiculous? That's ludicrous.
Well, one of these things is about, large sporting events like this is like the Olympics. The Olympics are it's a grand platform, basically, for people to make a statement and whichever kind of statement that is. Clearly, in this instance, they're clearly unhappy about 5,000 gay athletes turning up to their tiny town or the small city and staging a mass gay event.
Stupid people.
Too many rainbows.
Too many rainbows. They should actually look at what's going on. Joining us now is Tracy Horsburgh. Now, Tracy, you are Miss Gay Melbourne. How does
Apparently
it feel?
Apparently so.
Did you ever imagine you'd be Miss Gay Melbourne?
No, I didn't.
It's not. It wasn't on your list of top 10 things to do in 2009?
Not until about 2 weeks ago when I found out it was happening at the Glass House. My friend Mr. Business, or Vanessa, was telling me she was going to be performing there. And I'd heard about it last year and I thought, it sounds like a bit of fun or something different to do. And I thought I'd give it a go.
What made you decide to enter a competition like this? Because we probably should explain to our listeners that Miss Gay Melbourne is not your average swimsuit evening gown kind of beauty contest. It is a competition to find an articulate, you know, an articulate person, well, obviously lesbian, who can be a role model for the community.
There was a number of reasons why I decided to enter. One was I'd heard about last year's competition and that it was quite small last year, and I think sometimes it's really good to support our community events to help them to grow. And I heard there wasn't a lot of contestants last year, so I thought it'd be a good idea just to be a contestant to help bring the numbers up a bit and just participate in something. But it was also because I'm turning 30 this year, and I like to try different things and knock off different events and do things that challenge me. And it did make me quite nervous, the thought of being up on stage and answering questions, and I wasn't sure what to expect. So that sort of challenge and also just a bit of fun as well just seemed like a really nice idea at the time.
Yeah, look, I think you're pretty game getting up in front on a stage in front of you know, an increasingly drunk crowd of lesbians at the Glass House, which it was a really awesome night. But they only gave you questions to sort of briefly look over a little bit beforehand. Were you surprised at some of the things they asked you?
Yeah, I guess it was more serious than I thought it was going to be. Like, I understood what it was about and was about they were looking for moralistic answers and looking for a role model. So certainly I did expect some of the types of questions that came across.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, initially it was more serious than I expected, but I thought it was really well run. It was quite good.
Did you find any questions particularly tricky or sticky?
I did. There was two questions that were tricky. One, it was only tricky because I misheard the question. I was asked, what would I save if a house was on fire, my house was on fire? And I thought they said, what would you say if your house was on fire?
That's almost the same.
And I thought, that's a strange question, aside from saying the word fire. And my response was, this sex is on fire, which probably sounded absolutely ridiculous to the audience. And my poor little flatmates approached me later and said, why didn't you want to save us? Why didn't, you know, it sounded like I wanted to save my Kings of Leon CD. So that wasn't actually a tricky question, but because I misheard it, I answered it quite strangely. And the other tricky question was in the finals when they asked, what is the worst thing that you've ever done and would you take it back?
Yeah, you had a very interesting response to that, mate. It was very funny, very honest, brutally honest. I don't know if you want to share it again.
I suppose I shared it in front of 400 people, so I may as well do it again. Definitely one of the worst things I've ever done was when I was 23 years old, living in the south of France, on a campsite. There were four of us looking after a campsite that tourists were coming through. And one of my best friends that I was working with, Phil, him and I liked the same girl, and I basically cut his lunch and really hurt him and really upset him, and it sort of affected our friendship quite deeply for about 2 weeks, which was incredibly upsetting for me. And he's just the nicest guy in the world, and he would never have done what I did to him to me. So that was, yeah, I would definitely have taken it back if I could.
That's you were very honest about that at the time. You threw in a couple, you know, you did shagger, obviously, like you were on stage. We all just sort of got a bit of a laugh out of that, even though we did commiserate with you. I think there was a lot to be said about friendship in that answer. Were you when you saw the other contestants, did you think that you might have been in with a shot?
I thought there was a range of contestants. I actually thought that. I forget her name, but she works here at Joy.
Ginny.
I actually thought she was going to win, to be honest. That was my opinion at the time.
She was in with a shot.
Yeah, she was in with a good. And for some reason, I don't know what the judges were thinking, but they didn't put her in the top three. They had two other girls who probably who were in the top three, but I thought Ginny was really good as well. So I don't know. I have no idea.
We have no idea, but we think that she should have been in the top three maybe next year.
Yeah, so no, I definitely didn't expect to win. I had a bit of a sense that I may have been in the finals, but I didn't think I was going to win.
Now, you're a native of South Africa, and you've been here for 13 years, is that right?
Correct, yeah, going on 14.
Wow. So what's your experience of life in Melbourne as a lesbian then?
It's a lot better than my experience of life as a lesbian in South Africa. Growing up in South Africa, things have changed a lot over there, significantly in every sense of the word, not just within the gay community, obviously everything else to do with prejudice and apartheid and everything like that. But for me growing up, there was almost zero exposure or media publications, anything to do with anything gay. It wasn't even talked about in the media. There was no books, no magazines, just wasn't even talked about. All I knew about lesbianism was that my hockey teacher was gay and everyone just knew that, but I didn't even know what that really meant.
How old were you then?
15.
So you knew at 15 that you...
I didn't know I was gay at 15,
okay.
No.
But you just knew that your hockey teacher...
I knew she was a lesbian, yes.
Okay. But didn't know what it was?
No, I didn't know what it was, yep. And that's a core difference too. I think anyone at 15 in Australia would absolutely know a lot about homosexuality, just because it's talked about more openly at school and on the playground, and there is things in the media and everything like that. So However, South Africa is very different now. It's gone from being, you know, that point of just absolutely no-go zone, no one talks about it, no one acts on it. It's very, very hidden, very Christian society. It's now one of the few countries in the world where gay marriage is actually legal, and it's not just a civil union, it's gay marriage, and it is a very religious Christian country, quite Catholic too. So I think that's a huge step forward in progress. It's unbelievable.
So there's chance for Rudd the Dud to actually step up to the mark then, Kathy?
Yeah, that's it. And like we said before, you know, we should just prefer Tracy for PM and get her up into the National Conference and give those Labourites a bit something to say. Now, do you reckon, having had gone from, lived in South Africa until your teenage years and then coming here, do you think Melbourne's a good city to be gay in?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I actually, embarrassingly, was reading the Cosmopolitan about a month ago.
Actually, that never happened, right?
I was reading a particular magazine.
Yes. And there was a little, it had like a little facts page of all these sort of random facts. And one of the facts was that Google recently did a study on words that are searched in Google. And one of the things it says was the two places where the word sex is most commonly Googled is Turkey and Egypt, and the two places in the two top cities in the world where the word lesbian is Googled is Sydney, followed by Melbourne.
Wow.
Well, there you go.
That's so interesting.
We're leading the way.
So I certainly expected San Francisco to be number one. But yeah, that's, I mean, you know, it's not necessarily a reliable source, but yeah, that was really interesting. And I think Melbourne's really growing in its scene. It's constantly improving. Like, if you just look, you go back 10 years to what it used to be like, go back a year and even look at it now, it's really growing quite quickly. It still has a lot to improve on. I think there's still gaps in it, but it's definitely one of the best places in the world to live as a gay person.
You brought up then, Tracy, that things could be better. What do you actually think? Have you got any ideas for what could improve Melbourne for a gay city?
I think I did say this in the Miss Gay Melbourne competition. I think conceptually there needs to be an improvement within our community, less discrimination within the community itself. You know, there's discrimination sometimes between like lesbians towards bisexuals, and there's, you know, transgender issues and things like that. And I think just an overall acceptance of everyone within the community can create a better atmosphere and more of warmth. And also, and then just in terms of the scene, there's quite a gap between, you've sort of got your internet dating opportunity to meet people in terms of relationships or friends, and then there's kind of the alcohol-fueled environments of the pubs and the nightclubs and particular events, and there's not a huge amount in the middle. Around midsummer, yes, there's a lot more, but during the year, there's not a lot that goes on, enough, I think, for people. And it's not just about helping people to meet a potential partner. I think it's helping people to actually expand their gay network. So things like book clubs. I know there are groups that exist, but I think we just need a bit more. Something like a speed dating event, which is not just about speed dating for meeting someone for sexual encounters or relationships, but a speed dating networking thing that's about making friends as well.
I agree. I think women, we're very able to make good networks, but to have that opportunity to meet other people, to create other networks, is a great extension.
Now, so on that subject of speed dating, we've had an SMS in here from Chris and V. I think they might know you, Trace.
Oh, yes, I do know them, and it's actually Chris, who I had a chat with. Chris, we were having a conversation one day, and we were talking about this very issue, and we were talking about maybe getting together and organising some sort of a speed dating event. It has happened before, not often in Melbourne. I think there's been three or four lesbian speed dating events. I've actually been to three, and they were excellent. But they've sort of dropped off the radar, and, yeah, I wouldn't mind getting a little committee together and organising something like that, with the key focus of making, you know, that it's available for people to make friends as well. It's not just about for single people.
Right, okay. Because that is often a problem you find within the lesbian community, that once you hook up, or if you know, they call it nesting. So you're out on the scene and you find, you know, you do whatever, meet new people, find a girl, go away for 3 months, 6 months, 2 years, whatever, and, you know, and nest and never sort of meet new people again. So, but this text message that's come in from Chris says that he wants you to co-host the winter speed dating.
She.
Oh, sorry. Oh, there you go. My mistake. And there's also an email. embracetrace_trace@live.com. Is that true?
I'm not too sure what that means.
I think you've been glorified already on the internet. Now, we're talking to Tracy, who's Miss Gay Melbourne and recently crowned. What are we're talking about traditional beauty contests and the people who participate in those. There's been quite a bit of scandal over the last couple of months with Miss California and her opinions on gay marriage. What do you think that people who enter those sorts of competitions should be political? Should that kind of competition be a stage for which to, you know, put your opinions across on major issues?
I think politically, yes, they do need to have some strong views, and I really think that they should win based on a package. It is a beauty contest, and it's always traditionally been around beauty in that sense. So I think the whole package is important, but because young girls would look up to them, it is important that the views that they put across are fair and reasonable, and that they are good role models overall.
But are they good role models if they've got fake teeth, fake breasts, fake tan, fake hair, fake speeches? If they're actually trying to meet a criteria, if they're trying to tick the boxes for a fakeness of a woman that doesn't really exist, then are they really role models? Whereas you, I can see, are a role model. You're a real woman. You've got real opinions. The women on beauty contests that I see are actually trying to tick those boxes to fit into a particular kind of...
They want world peace.
Yeah, I want world peace, and right? I like to ride horses, and, you know, I love children, and... Well,
yeah.
You know?
They want a smoother world. I guess that's the format of those kinds of contests, though, isn't it? It's the Donald Trump-inspired, you know, you must look like a catalogue model in order to, you know, to win it and look good in a bikini. Well, thank goodness we didn't have that sort of, you know, obviously Miss Gay Melbourne was never going to be something along those lines. But in terms of a role model, would you see your role now as, you know, inspiring other lesbians to not be like you, but to, you know,
to
look up to you, to aspire to do something, things that you do?
I would really like to inspire people, yes. I don't know whether I do or not, but I'd certainly, like to inspire people. That would be a really good thing to do.
You've certainly inspired a lot of discussion within the lesbian community, talking about what is a beauty pageant and what to, and, you know, what should be said and what should not be said. Now, I've actually collected an audio of Miss California. Now, Carrie was going for Miss Universe,
mm-hmm.
Rob,
yeah, she
title.
She was Miss California.
She was Miss California. Now, she said something that really stopped her in her tracks and took away her title.
Recent polls have shown a fifth of Americans can't locate the U.S. on a world map. Why do you think this is?
I personally believe that U.S. Americans are unable to do so because some people out there in our nation don't have maps, and I believe that our education, like such as in South Africa and the Iraq, everywhere like such as, and I believe that they should, our education over here in the U.S. should help the U.S. Or should help South Africa and should help the Iraq and the Asian countries, so we will be able to build up our future for our children.
Thank you very much.
Now, that wasn't the right file. We're going to try and find the right file. But that was actually another dumb speech. Now, the question was asked, why don't American kids know how to find American states on the map? And her answer was, because they don't have maps.
Mm,
now, how dumb is that? Now, I'm going to try and find this other file. And we'll get... Oh, have you got it, Lisa? Let's play it and see what happens.
Let's have California, Carrie Prashan. What to do. Your question comes from judge number 8, Perez Hilton.
Are we worried?
You should be.
Vermont recently became the 4th state to legalize same-sex marriage. Do you think every state should follow suit? Why or why not?
Well, I think it's great that Americans are able to choose one or the other. We live in a land that you can choose same-sex marriage or opposite marriage. And you know what? In my country and in my family, I think that I believe that a marriage should be between a man and a woman. No offense to anybody out there, but that's how I was raised, and that's how I think that it should be between a man and a woman. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
At that point, the judges just all looked down and went, oh, shit.
Well, you know, look, she did choose Perez Hilton for a start. She must have, you know, she must have been feeling pretty confident. Now, Tracy, what do you make of this? Because I'd like to play devil's advocate with it, if I may, and say that she's completely entitled to her own opinion. And if she doesn't believe that gay marriage is for her, she's not a role model she's not an icon for the gay community. I don't know, maybe she's perfectly justified to say what she said. What do you think?
I must say I respect the fact that she stuck to her guns. Like she that's what she truly believes, and that's what she said. Because a lot of people would fluff up the answer to do the people-pleasing thing to win the title. Mm-hmm. And I think she really, you know, she was honest and she stuck to what she believes in. So I respect that side of it. It was also a really difficult question because it's a lose-lose question in a lot of ways, because America is quite a religious place and there are a lot of people who believe that marriage is between a man and a woman. So either way, whichever way she went, she probably was going to get criticised for it. I think that it's a really positive move in terms of the gay movement and acceptance towards gay people that the people that ran that contest actually stripped the crown from her for a number of reasons. One, because it has created a great amount of attention within the mainstream media, which I think is really good.
Mm-hmm.
Because the more attention that's paid on this topic, the more chances we have of eventually having equal rights. And it's not just about marriage. There's lots of gay people who don't necessarily want to get married. There's lots of straight people that don't necessarily want to get married. But I think, yeah, it's really exceptionally important that eventually that change does happen, because it'll increase overall acceptance throughout the world.
Well, what are your thoughts on gay marriage in Australia?
I think it would be really good if they did legalise it.
Come on, Rudd. I'm hanging around
for those exact reasons that I just said. You know, not everybody wants to get married, but it's just more that movement. It's one of those things where, you know, we look back now and think how ridiculous it is that women never used to be able to vote and that getting divorced was a huge difficulty. Now it's just a part of standard life. Women vote, and if you need to get a divorce, you can get a divorce. And I think it's one of those things we'll look back on in a decade's time and go, isn't that absolutely ridiculous that gay people couldn't get married legally if they wanted to? And especially given that it doesn't hurt anybody or change anything.
I know, people are just frightened of the unknown, I guess, and they're scared that it's going to change the whole foundation of society. Now, Tracy, you're not going to get out of our little pageant segment. I didn't fill you in on this bit. Now, what I've done is created 10 questions, and you have to pick a number between 1 and 10.
And it's a lucky dip.
It's a lucky dip. You might get Perez Hilton, but you might get us. And we're going to ask you that question, and then we're going to have to say goodbye.
Sure. Okay. Number 7.
Number 7. Oh, this is a good one. Are you ready?
Okay.
Are you frightened?
Hit me with it.
What is your definition of success?
Definition of success is love.
Aww.
I think if you feel success, you feel loved. And, yeah, I think that success, my definition of success is being happy, healthy, loved, and keeping to your integrity.
Tracy, it's been an absolute pleasure having you. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your opinions and story.
Thanks very much for having me.
Now, following up from last week's show on transgender discrimination, I was informed that a transgender woman living in the outer east southeast suburbs was allegedly discriminated against. The alleged discriminatory discriminatory behaviour included refusing her access to female toilets, telling her that she can attend the venue if she dressed as a male, which are barring her for life, and telling her when she tries to reason with staff that she's being charged, and telling her to go and do that sort of thing in Collingwood. Discrimination based on our outer image is far from acceptable. It's about time people looked at people as individuals and looked within. And thank you very much to the support we got last week.
Yeah, it was a good show last week. I think we covered a lot of ground in terms of trans issues. Obviously, this particular incident you've just mentioned really just highlights the fact that that nothing's really changed in the suburbs. But then, you know, which is strange, because if you look at the amount of gay people and couples who have migrated out, we don't have gay ghettos anymore. Like, yes, we've got, you know, Paran, South Yarra, but people are living in Coburg and Preston and buying picket fences and raising their rainbow families out there. So it's probably only a matter of time.
Yeah, I think we'll get there. But so if you're seeing trans people or anybody being discriminated against, you know, if you can lend a helping hand, that would be great. Oh, do you feel it? It's time for our raw deal.
It is time for our raw deal. Okay, on the weekend, I went into Yahoo only to find the most disgusting and degrading of articles published in a Men's Health article.
There's a surprise.
Absolutely. It outlined how to lie and cheat your way into getting a woman, basically, to do what you want, aligning women with dogs, and in general stating that women are objects for which men can control.
Oh, goody. What did it say, Liz?
Well, there was a little section, and it was on sex and relationships, and there was this beautiful model tied up, basically.
Oh, great. So we've got a woman in restraint and an article saying this is how you can get a woman to do what you want.
And pretty much, and basically what it said, from catching her eye to getting sex when you want it, we have 6 steps that make sure that you'll get what you want, basically. So it was an article on what to do to get her into bed.
Oh, great. I should have read that, shouldn't I?
Well, you should have read it. And there's point number 5, basically how to get her to pleasure you, shall we say. It seems Pavlov missed a trick by getting his dog to salivate at the sound of a bell. It's called social conditioning, says Fulbright. It's obviously a nutbag. If the brain knows it's going to be rewarded after an act, it will begin to anticipate and feel pleasure at the thought of it. So basically what it was saying is that if you give her a pat on the head when she's pleasuring you, she's going to want to do it more and more often.
Are you sure this wasn't in Zoo Weekly or Ralph or something? Oh, I'm having a really hard time thinking that this is part of Men's Health.
It was definitely Men's Health. It was on a Yahoo pop-up.
So when you logged into your Yahoo account, well, not just Yahoo, you've just done a search, it was one of those little windows. Absolutely. With a woman tied up, and yep, that was the article that you saw. So any child
could see that.
Could have seen that and thought, oh, gee, there's a lady in ropes, mummy. I'll check that out.
Exactly.
That's completely inappropriate, Men's Health. So what did you do about it?
Well, I wrote a letter. Oh, I sent a letter of complaint to Yahoo, but it was a bit of a struggle finding how to actually contact Yahoo. It's almost impossible. And I also sent a letter to the editor of Men's Health inviting them on the show to discuss the article, but it's pretty much unlikely that we're going to get a response from that.
Right, so they declined to comment by way of not commenting.
Pretty much.
Well, I'm going to throw a spanner in the works here and play devil's advocate, right?
Not like you.
No, like when I was editing B News, we published a lot of articles about sex, right?
Right.
And a lot of those were, and even sexual, and it's a little bit different, but sexual health organisations will publish, you know, books on how to cruise in a sauna, how to pick up a guy, how to get men to have sex with you, other men.
But did it involve lying?
I don't think we ever published anything about lying or deception. No. But what's the difference? That's my question.
I think one is that this article was probably about lying and cheating your way through, rather than here's some helpful tips about how to make nice eye contact and say nice things and make a compliment, rather than, you know, pat them on the head, rub them on the belly, and things will be happening for you downstairs.
Right. Okay. Well,
I think it's pretty gross, actually. I really don't think it's necessary to degrade women like that.
No, absolutely not. I don't think we ever published anything that would degrade gay men in that sense. But I'll be very interested to see with Lisa whether they actually contact you again and belatedly decline your invitation to appear. Absolutely. On a gay radio station.
Well, let's hope they do. The invitation is out there for Men's Health. we don't like you. So come on the show and stand up for what you've done. We want to know why you've done it. You've been listening to Hear Me Roar with Sue, Kathy and Lisa.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.